This is Maria Buyukos.
And this is Zachary Richard Hill.
And you're listening to Creative Honey.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Creative Honey podcast. And today we have a guest that I've been friends with for a while, and he was my first graphic design professor. His name is Michael Stinson. So it's a real treat for me to have him on the podcast because he's taught me so much and I've learned really so much from him. And he's also runs his own studio, Ramp Creative, with his partner Rachel, and they both run TypeEd, which is a boutique typography studio. And I consider him, you know, not to be biased, one of the strongest typographic minds, you know, at least on the West Coast. So he's done a lot for type and typography, and TypeEd has done so much for younger students and design professionals in bolstering their typography skills.
Yeah, this guy is the real deal. So take some notes and listen in because he's got some great stuff to say.
Yeah, definitely. Enjoy, guys.
Michael, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
So we know that you're this typographic master, and we really would like to pick your brain today.
Okay. Not a problem.
And just as a disclaimer, I'm one of Michael's former students from way... He was my first design professor, so this is also, you know, it's a great, you know, I'm really looking forward to chatting with you. I always do, like, off mic, so I've been wanting to get you on at some point, so I'm really glad that we're making this happen, for sure. So.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Zach. That's very nice.
Yeah, definitely.
You were a great student.
So
it's on the record.
Oh, man, I'm, like, super flattered. I had no idea what I was doing pretty much, like, 60% of the time I was in your class, and I feel like the last, like, 3 weeks, I'm like, okay, I'm, like, this is starting to, like, click here, so I appreciate
that. Nobody does. You're just being honest.
Yeah, no.
Nobody totally knows what they're doing.
You know, that's a fair point. I'm still figuring it out, for sure. So,
yeah, we all are.
Yeah, definitely. So we want to kind of just dive into a little bit about, like, your background and TypeEd's background. And I know you're working extensively with TypeEd, which is, you know, an education studio dedicated towards, you know, teaching typographic philosophies and practices. And we want to kind of dive into that a little bit before we kind of dive into some things about what we could do to be better at type and typography in general. So can you speak a little bit about your background and TypeEd's background a little bit?
So the 411 on me, came up, raised by a military family, came up with a lot of discipline already, but was, I started in art very young, like 7. I was oil painting by 10. Wow. And won a lot of children's contests, but even on the adult level. And so my mom and my first second grade teacher, they found a talent in me right away, I guess. So my mom just nurtured that all the way through. When I got to junior high, I was taking college life drawing and painting at colleges. Wow. And then when I got to high school, I was more interested in, you know, baseball and sports like everybody else, but also math. I was a big math guy. And I got into physics quite a bit, and I applied to Berkeley for physics, got in, couldn't afford it, didn't go. So I went to Cal Poly for the aerospace degree as Plan C, actually.
Cool.
And then I got bored with, you know, quantum physics and thermodynamics and everything. And so I went back to the art department, wandered through, and found the design department. The chair said, yeah, you should be here. And then when I started taking classes, it was way, way easy.
Right, compared really to that easy. Other, yeah, everything else.
With a math studying, and art background or upbringing, it was really easy for me. So it was natural. So I went right into the industry while I was still in college, doing annual reports and pay stub. And all through the 90s, did annual reports. Handling a lot of type. And I got a lot of philosophy on type and usage and discipline from the various agencies I worked for. Mainly one guy when I got out of college. I worked with a single guy in the advertising industry. And he was a Scottish guy that was super yardstick discipline kind of guy. So that's nice. Where I got even more discipline. But all through the 90s, did annual report. And all through the 90s, I just kept hearing, why don't you open your own shop, open your own shop. You hear that all over the place. Because mm-hmm. I already was on a national level award-wise when I was about 24, 25.
Wow.
And so I opened up Ramp in 2002 with Rachel, and the rest is history. As we were working in Ramp, we noticed that, you know, people coming through the door, interns and whatnot, because Rachel was teaching off and on, and she'd have her student come in. And then she had me start teaching, like where I met you, Zach.
Yeah.
I just – actually, I don't know if you heard the story of that. She had a friend that was, you know, Mark Daybill.
Yeah.
The grad school of Rachel. And he was just trying to fill the semester.
Right. I remember you saying something like that, and you just came in, right?
I came in, did the class, and then he wouldn't let me leave.
Well, I'm glad that happened, for sure.
So I said, okay. You know, they really pressured me. And they're such nice guys anyway.
Yeah.
Such a nice curriculum they got there.
Right.
So, yeah, I was there for a while and started sending all you guys off to schools and whatnot. But at Ramp, we noticed a lot of people in our area downtown coming through. Straight out of school or even off, still in school, having two or three levels of type and not showing it. I mean, it was obvious in the portfolio, the resumes, it's like you didn't have type the way I need you to have type as a business.
Right.
So we opened TypeEd to try to help that because students were extremely frustrated coming out of school and not getting work and knowing that the type skills are lax. So we developed TypeEd to bridge that gap between the industry and, you know, the university level, and just to get everything up at the to an industry level, because the schools and the industry have always had this disconnect. Like the professors do not do their homework on what's going on in the industry at all.
Right.
So except for the art schools, those guys pull in industry people right out to teach. But the state system and the university system, University of California system, doesn't do that. And so TypeEd was geared to help designers become better designers, you right. know, through type, but have a type mentality. When in the early years when I learned type at Art Center and the agencies, it was always built from the page up with type first, and it's different now. And I think that's a mistake, and so we're trying to teach the fundamentals of the mentality and the state of mind of type first, because type, which holds the content, sells. You can't mm-hmm. sell shit without type in the content. So that's what we teach at TypeEd, is more of a state of mind of respecting the information and the reader more.
It's a great philosophy.
Yeah, definitely. So I think we appreciate that background story for sure. And I mean, I think that gives us a lot to talk about, and I feel like one thing we could kind of dive into right now off of that is the importance of typography in general. And I think it's getting overlooked, like you said, especially in the state system. Because, you know, I graduated from a Cal State, and it was a great design program. But one flaw I definitely think I experienced in my time there was, you know, type and typography in general was generally overlooked. And we were putting the images in the design first before, you know, the type was definitely an afterthought. And why do you think that is, Mike?
Because we're in an image-driven society.
Okay.
Now, if you ask me this, if we were back, you know, maybe 50 years ago in the mid, you know, 20th century, it wasn't that way, because we're doing everything on boards. And on boards, you have the board, you draw the grid, you put the type on it. Right. You have to make the type fit first before you can add the imagery. That process was done for a long time, ever since, you know, Bauhaus, you know, the early stages. I forget when we started photo typesetting, but somewhere after the Second World War. And so all that time, we're doing it on boards, grid, type, image. in that order for a long time until we got to 1988. When that Mac came out, then it changed. We were able to reproduce imagery first. And the thing is that you guys have to understand about when you do paste up, you put the images on the board after the text, but the images, you're not doing anything with the imagery. It's either the photographer and the printer together, either one or both. And so you worked like that. You get the content from the writer, you get the images from the photographer, and you put them together on a board. Now that you can do everything, manipulate your own imagery.
Yeah.
These screens that we have really taken over our psychology of getting our attention. And the thing is you have to respect as a designer that the imagery in these beautiful screens and everything, and I'm not condoning it at all. It's a great where we ended up with this beautiful imagery. However, I've always been taught that the imagery is just the carrot. Mm-hmm. It's the dangling carrot to get us to the stuff that we want to know, the information.
Right.
And that's the respect that you have to have for the content. It's driving the bus behind the imagery. And, the imagery has to be beautiful and entice, right? But as a designer, you have to respect what it's there for. Right. And that's the grab. So in a communication standpoint, that's what we were taught. And it's not being taught so much anymore. You're taught now to make beautiful imagery to engage. I mean, that's what agencies want, something different, right?
Yeah.
but as a well-rounded designer, it's never the imagery is never disconnected from the idea or the concept. Absolutely. Which is directly connected and derived from the data and the research. And I don't think we're teaching on that kind of intellectual level anymore, because they used to when I was in school, and I don't see it. And I've been in a lot of schools, now.
Right.
And I don't see that level of, and I've tried to introduce that level, and I've gotten feedback. You know how teachers get feedback, so they get from the school of what they're. I used to get, when I first started at COC, everything was too hard. Mark and Kevin came to me and said, what's going on? It's really difficult. I said, it's not. It's not. This isn't biochemistry.
No one's going to like lose their lives, right? Yeah, exactly. No one's dying with bad typography. You're right.
I said, it's just the graphic design industry has this, especially in schools, has this lack of discipline.
Yeah.
And I explained to them that, look, there's a balance in graphic design. That's why I belong here, because of engineering and art.
Yeah.
And it's the two together. We've come to a place with imagery where it's all on the art side now, having fun, making great imagery. But what's it for?
No, that's
the
great
technicality
point.
In the mechanics of it, tied to the information, is on the engineering side. That's where all the strategy is, planning, and really the fun side of design.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's 90% that, and then the 10% is making the imagery and, doing all that. So that's kind of where we ended up, and we're trying to counterbalance that with type ed and the mentality and everything. And now that we mentioned RAMP's has a new purpose now. We're redeveloping RAMP in a different way to follow type ed.
Ah,
that's great.
Because for 12 years, RAMP's led type ed, and now we wanted to follow it. So in a business, with our business consultant, we're going a different direction. And so that we're just starting over and trying to adapt it to our philosophy with type ed, because type ed's working.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely is. Yeah.
And nobody's doing what we're doing, and we get a lot of praise across the country and other type organizations and everything. Because this is a... It's like one of those things that nobody really wants to do because you can't make a lot of money, but has to be done because it just keeps producing more poor work out there.
Yeah.
And we're trying to help that, because all designers want to be good and want to produce good work, but half of them don't even know what good work is.
That's true.
Yeah. No, that's definitely true.
They're just pumping stuff out and going, hey, I did it.
Yeah.
Great. It sucks.
Yeah.
With the digital world, it seems like it's just so much easier to have that kind of like quick turnaround, and the work is kind of more diluted because the tools make it easier to do it faster.
Things have been definitely dribble-fied.
That's a good way to put it.
In the psychology out there, and we all live in a like society now, And I'm like the only one out there going, I don't like it. I dislike it.
Right.
And, you know, that's mistaken for whatever you want to call it, friction, pushback. I've gotten all those words, you know, kind of a thing with corporate world. And I said, look, that's that friction and pushback, the struggle, is what makes things great.
Absolutely.
It's when it's a struggle and a fight, that's when you know you got something.
Right.
It's when it's easy, you're just pumping stuff out. I mean, that's just the commercial world of you know, pumping stuff out without any review or any kind of review. No.
Yeah.
So no, it's difficult. It's a different era now, since we're talking about imagery driven era.
Right.
Yeah, that's especially tough in the era we're in now. And kind of curious. So when a designer is going about choosing a typeface, what are some things they can need to consider?
I'm doing this new thing called Reset now, and Rachel's going to be putting it up where I record these little things that I see type-wise. And I did one yesterday, 6 minutes. And it was a logo, symbol with type underneath it. And the type was just, the symbol is nice, but the typeface choice was incorrect. Mm. Super clean, modern logo. And they picked an Art Deco typeface that was really retro. And it had sushi in the word, Japanese. Right. Japanese is progressive. They're either one or the other. They're extremely traditional or they're progressive. And with the word sushi in it, and you have that Japanese twinge on it, mm-hmm. Art Deco does not work. So, to answer your question, choosing a typeface, it really has to be contemplated from the get-go. And I always say, you know, a lot of creative directors say, the answer's in the brief, right? So right. If it's called Wine and Sushi, the restaurant, right? So it's a little wine glass, and the top of it has a little red circle looking like a sushi roll. Mm-hmm. It's really nice. I'll show it to you. But the type, it just looked like two different – they didn't go together.
Yeah.
So the typeface choice, you have to look at, like I did, the word sushi. You got wine. You've got – the colors were black and red. That's definitely Japanese. So I'm looking around the culture. But you also have to know that it's, you know, a contemporary restaurant. It's obvious they're not trying to be traditional. So you see how my thinking of gathering all the adjectives together mm-hmm. in my mind – that all together will make my typeface choice. Once I have all the data, the information of where it needs to be, that's when I make my typeface choice. And then while I'm making it, I'm thinking of signage, menus, everything else that's going to be used in the back of my mind. How's it going to be put on a sign? Is it going to be neon? Well, we might want to try a heavier typeface to go with the bulk of this glass, that kind of a thing. And that's really what Reset is for, is to – everybody wants to know what's in my head. You know, friends like you guys, you know, I have a difficult time explaining that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's what Reset's for.
So we can kind of see it in action a little bit,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I take stuff from the field in the world that's okay, not good. It's not excellent or mind-blowing, but you get to see the live action of before and after – of how I would handle it.
That's great.
And just like things that annoy us. You know, like, you know, when we used to get DVDs in the back of the DVD case, all the content that's on the back is just ridiculous.
It's a mess. Right? Yeah.
I did one. I took a Star Wars one.
Oh, cool.
And I tweaked it, and you could see the before and after, and it's like night and day. Wow. I mean, the tweaks are very intricate.
Right.
But when you actually start to look at it, you know, with your eyes, that training of before and after with the what I'm doing in Reset is what needs to be taught.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's not being taught. There's no refinement being taught. And that's what we're trying to do.
Right.
With Reset.
Yeah. No, I think that's...
Show you the refinements.
Yeah, no, that sounds like a great thing you guys are doing. We'd love to see that. Maybe put that in the show notes for mm-hmm. sure, so we can share that with
yeah,
the
we
listeners.
Will.
Yeah,
we'll.
Awesome. And... Yeah, no, on that note, you know, I know a lot of our listeners are young designers that are just starting or still in school. And, you know, I remember when I was your student, there were certain fundamentals that you really preached to me and to, you know, the rest of the class about like things like, you know, the grid is super important, keep to the math, at least initially, and mm-hmm. how to build typographic systems. And I know we can't like teach the fundamentals in a, you know, 1 hour podcast, but is there like an overview of where, you know, some students could get started and like, you know, in typography and like, you know, building a good system and just how can they build a foundation besides going to TypeEd, obviously?
That's a hard question because it depends on where you go. I mean, there's lots of choices out there, right, with community colleges and everything.
Right.
The one thing I would probably add is the thing for me ever since I was a kid is I'm razor-focused, laser-like focused. And so I study everything. And what I used to do as a kid is I used to tear things apart visually. And that really helped me when I got to the professional world, because in order to assemble something, it is an engineering thing. In order to build something, you have to take it apart, right? Nice. So design is no different. Design is everything on a page. So when you tear it apart, you take all the skin off, you get the skeleton, and that's the grid. Because in the communications industry, the grid is what delivers the content to us on a subconscious level. The way it's arranged on the page, whether it's a website or a mobile or paper, how it's arranged, reading upper left to lower right, that's where it's all design. It's all from proportion and math at that point. And the reason, the thing that people don't understand about design is there's misconception in schools about graphic design. Hey, it's going to be fun. I only have to do 86, you know, units or whatever the heck. And I don't have to spend any money. But to be good, to be really good and disciplined as a designer, and that's what I wanted. I didn't want to be a designer. I wanted to be the designer. That was my standards, and I still have those kind of high standards. But you have to, you know, go back to the page and the math, which we learned a long time ago. And see, and I already got that when I got to design. In the design department, it's like, okay, I already have that in my head. I need to relearn that. But that's the thing that we have to talk about is approach. Mm-hmm. And to get that discipline that you're asking for, they have to study more. I would want to know who's teaching at my university, who, what guys am I getting. I think they just roll into a university, they're enticed by all the visuals, mm-hmm. LCAD including. And they're very good schools, but the mentality is not there. When they come into my type class at LCAD, they're thinking this is going to be fun. They're going to be using letters and everything like that, and they find out this is really challenging. I got to figure things out, right? They thought they're going to have more fun. Yes, right. They're going to have fun. But in a type class, it's more discipline and mechanics. I tell them that, like I told you, you're going to thank me when you get out, because type is going to be more natural to you. You won't have to go backwards and start learning it as you put pictures on the page first.
Right? Yeah.
So you have this circle thing of, oh, what do I do with the type, you know, kind of thing. So, but they have to learn engineering always comes first in graphic design, and art is second. It's always left brain, right brain in that order. And see, with discipline, it's hard for artists or designers to accept that, because it is discipline. And as designers, we don't like discipline.
That's true.
That's why I didn't go in the military. Yeah. So, but it's that mentality of the grid and the math that starts with everything on this planet. The planet's on a grid. That's what I explain to people.
That's true.
Everything, right. Every product we use is engineered before the style is slapped on it. It's engineered first. How do I use it? And graphic design is no different. It's the same thing. I mean, that's what I see in the world now that I'm in my mid-40s. Everything is always overlapped. Music, type, art, engineering. They're all the same because they all speak the same language. That language is math.
Yep.
Right. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How they get that, they just have to study at what school to get in. I really, if I was going back to school now, I'd really be doing my homework on who's teaching and what their background is.
Right. No, I think it's a good point. I tried to do that a little bit, but yeah, it worked out for me. But yeah, I think it's a good point is to research and be really cognitive of, you know, cognizant of what you're going to be, where you're going to be studying and who you're going to be learning from. When you know, one thing that you made me think of is lettering. And cause you're talking about how, you know, art, as designers, we're thinking artists, you know, being an artist first, at least typically, cause most designers are coming from an art background, and mm-hmm. we're seeing like this renaissance of hand lettering. And right. and that's a very creative artistic practice. Do you how do you see that impacting like typography or the study of typography in general? Because I know like a lot of young students can like confuse the two basically, right?
I know. And see, I already has the discipline of knowing the difference. That's why we teach the difference. Lettering versus typography. Now, lettering is typography, but typography is definitely not lettering.
Right.
Yeah. The discipline of typography, the definition is arranging characters one by one to make words and sentences. It's the actual act of doing it. Lettering is a different act. It's doing that by hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's typography by hand is what it is. And so for me, is that what I see lettering as is it's great and everybody's having fun, artistic. But again, my kind of standards, there's very few out there that know what they're doing or creating anything different or unique. I see a lot out there is the same.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And it's great, but I completely agree. Yeah, I think there's only like a handful, like less than 10, in my opinion, that are really doing it at a high, high level, you know, that have either pioneered the craft.
Yeah, Seb Lester, let's say. Seb Lester.
Right.
He's the real deal, right? And so for me, as a creative director, though, as a designer, now he's a strict letterer, right? And I group letterers in illustration rather than design. They probably won't like that.
Well, that's a good point,
actually. It's true, especially Gemma. Gemma's an awesome talent.
Yeah, she's great.
But I, as a creative director, I categorize her as an illustrator.
Right.
Not necessarily a type expert. Now, Jennifer Sterling and Marion Banchus, those are type experts because they've set copy.
Yes.
Because that's different, right? What I try to teach you guys at school, Zach, is to do both. A real good designer needs to do both because someday you're going to be like me and you're going to direct it. You're not necessarily going to letter. I don't letter. I can. Every once in a while, marks of desire. You know, there's a few things I did.
Right, right.
But as a creative director, I know that that's not my value, and I'm wasting money and time. So I'm going to hire a professional.
Right.
As a creative director, you direct people. So lettering, I see as just a vast option now than it was 20 years ago. I mean, you really had to call experts in, and they were super expensive 20 years ago. Now you can pretty much get just about anybody if you find the right one that fits the content of what you're trying to advertise or promote, right, or communicate. And lettering is just a wider option now for me as I see it as a creative director. Sometimes I want to do it, but I know everybody's in this maker mindset now, and I like doing it as well, but it's not practical as a business director or creative director. I would want to line the right style up with the right, like Seb Lester won't work on some projects.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the way I see it as a director now is it's awesome. It's just have this vast options now. And it's so beautiful. You want to use them all, right?
Yeah.
And we can do that with Typed. Who can we hire? Oh, holy shit, it's too expensive or whatever. Because they all have these editorial, you know, kind of fees and stuff. But anyway, so lettering is right now, it's a great time. It's a great time. It's just it's almost – the abundance of it is almost overwhelming.
Yeah, absolutely.
On the agency side, you know, you have so many options to choose from. It's great, but, you know, see, as a creative director, though, you're going to have times when you need to use that and times when you don't. And that's the thing about being a creative director. You're always looking for something different and new. And I know that lettering, a lot of letters have styles, and they're set in that style. Seb Lester, you know, Gemma, you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I see them that way as an illustrator, then I can only hire from certain things.
So based on the concept, right? And, you know, sometimes it's not even appropriate to use, like, lettering for a lot of design work. But
correct.
And then even for a certain concept, a certain letterer might be more appropriate than another letterer, right? And that's kind of what correct. You're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, somebody, you might use a letterpress guy for something, and you might use, you know, Seb Lester for something else, and so on and so on. But there are a lot of great talents out there. And, that's what I try to teach as a mentality to you guys on the school level is you do have to do it all because someday you're going to direct it.
Right.
If I got to direct a letterer, I got to know what the freaking spur is.
Yeah.
Because they know what it is. And so that's why I try to teach you guys. You got at least, I'm not just trying to teach you to be a designer. I'm teaching you to be a director as well. So you have to know all aspects of lettering. You have to set the content, letter the headline. And I see lettering more as a headline thing. Just one or two words, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then you got to put content with it, a lot more content. So you got to do both with hierarchy and everything else in there I taught you. So that's kind of like how I see lettering's role in design, you know, me personally.
Yeah. So this is very interesting how there's like a reemergence happening with all of that. Do you have any thoughts as to why it might be reemerging again, hand lettering and all of that?
The craft part of it, I think it's because the digital age came on so strong. Mm-hmm. And when everybody started to realize it's all plastic.
Yeah.
It's not real. The virtual world, the virtual world's coming on strong now again.
Right.
And I think we all have to dip our feet in to fill the water again, just like we did, you know, when the internet came on. But we find out how cold it is. The water's cold.
Yeah.
In the digital world. You guys are probably seeing that with UI UX.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's not much warmth there. And to me as a designer, though, I always love both the cold and the warm. So I like it all, no matter what it is. I just don't want to be in one for too long.
That's exactly how I feel.
Not be in a good place, because all designers want variety.
Right.
Yes.
No different. But to be just stuck doing one thing, oh, that's death for me.
Yeah,
that's when the creativity stops.
Oh, dude, I totally agree.
Yeah,
oh,
Zach and I talk about that all the time.
It's like, I like doing UI UX, but can I like do like a poster or a pamphlet every once in a while? Like, yeah, that's kind of how I feel, for sure.
You can. You're just not doing it for Google.
Yeah, exactly. That's a very good point, yeah.
You're staying in the cold world.
Yeah, that's totally true.
Google will be an awesome experience for about a year, then. You know, that's what we did in my 20s. We bounced around a lot. One, to get more different experience, but also to double your salary. So I made a lot of money in my 20s just dancing around.
Right.
But it's tough, though, because once you've done it all, too, that eventually when you get to my age, you're only going to be looking for people that can give you ideas, where you can provide ideas. That's what design comes down to.
Right.
Is the idea is what sells. Any ad firm, I'll tell you that. And design always follows the idea. So it's wherever you can place the ideas. Somebody that will give you the chance to be creative enough, whatever the medium. And that's getting harder and harder to sell now, especially for me. It's getting really hard to sell people in these mentalities. Oh, we just need UI UX. No, you don't. You have problems with branding.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Seriously. Like,
you need this first.
I'll deal with some clients, and we have great clients where I work, but they'll want, like an app or a website, and it's like just UI UX, and halfway through the project they're like, yeah, can you do our branding and identity too? Because we actually, just realized we don't have any of that either. Yeah, it's totally true. So sometimes, I know you speak about this before, like educating the client a little bit, you kind of want to have that partnership, right? Where you could, you know, be honest with the client, they could be honest with you, and as a result, like usually the results are better, I should say, right?
Yeah, and that's what's tough for us to sell out there as a firm now, that we find it's getting harder and harder to team up, because they still, the problem out there, you guys will see too, is they either see you as a partner or a vendor. And it's always been that way. You're one or the other. If you can get them to be a partner, you'll have them for 10 years, like I've had CWS Capital.
Yeah.
And we're just a family. And they get excited every year. They actually called us early, so that the big production we did last year for the shareholder meeting and the report. They're so excited. They're starting now in the summer. That's never happened.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Wow.
12 years in. So, but with clients, you have to sit down and hammer out, okay, what's your system of working? Here's our system of working. Here's the process in which this is done best. And usually they're coming at you with a project, like you said, UI UX in the middle, right?
Yeah.
And to me, the process always starts with identity. Always.
Absolutely.
You have a strong identity. If you don't, you got to fix it first and then move forward. And that's how it's always been. But now with the web and everything, I just need a website, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's great. But I recommend you put it up with just black type, because your identity stinks. It's not going to work. So it's really hard to educate and sell at the same time this day and age, especially when they're needing one thing and they don't know what they have. They don't know how big the branding spectrum is.
Right.
See, and then how important branding is, and the importance of having a strong identity first. This is how we talk to clients. You have to get that done first. I know you were spending money here, but you need to spend money here. And if we spend money here, I'm wasting it for you. And I don't want to do that.
Right.
And so they'll either buy it or not. And so they'll either have us in or not, and to start correctly or not. And it's hard too, because I explain the experience that I've had of going backwards. You know, when you do all this beautiful work and then they want you to put a logo with it, it's really hard, because everything stems from the information that you use in the research and the brief to make the logo. And then everything stems and spectrums out from the logo, everything, the voice, the attitude, everything. And so that's the core of why identity is so important for branding. And people disregard the importance of that identity when they're in the middle of their business, like just wanting an app or something. We'll get clients, guys, where they have an awesome idea for the product, but the name just stinks. It's just not going to work.
Yep.
Yeah, I've seen that.
I've come across that.
Can't talk them out of it. And we actually end up turning it down because it's not going to work.
Yeah. Right.
Agreed.
And naming, people take for granted that it's easy, and it's not. It's really not.
Yep.
And if you really are doing a high-end brand, you have to go to an expert on naming. I point them to people myself. I say, you really need a better name here, and you should call these guys.
I super agree.
When you're done with that, call me back.
Yeah, definitely.
Keep going. So, that's kind of a tough one.
Yeah, I think it's really important to line yourself up with a company that you feel is kind of jiving with your culture and you're jiving with their culture. And it's just there's so many components to consider, and it's sometimes a little overwhelming to make.
Yeah, it's really hard in the corporate world because they have a strict business mentality. It's business. They're hiring you for a task, right?
Yeah.
And that's the problem psychologically right there. It's a task.
Right.
It's not a you're getting hired for a path, actually. And we're walking on that path with you, corporate world. And that doesn't mean, you know, the length of the project. No, branding goes always the span of the life of the company.
Right.
And when you have a firm involved, they're walking along that path with you for a long time. Until you make a change or do something else, hire another agency, and you go down another path. But that's the misperception in hiring, you know, a design firm is, hey, we do things this way, we're hiring you, we're only interviewing you. No, it works both ways. Works both ways. I'm interviewing you as well.
Right.
If I want to work with you, I just don't want – I'm not in it for just the money. I'm in it for happiness.
Definitely.
You know, I could make $1 million being unhappy. Everybody's doing that. Right? Right. You just ask any Wall Street guy. So, you know, and then they have a high suicide rate. So
yeah.
With designing, you know, you have to partner with people. It's all about people again. It's chemistry. That's what it comes down to. It's not just business. It's chemistry. You have to have the right people with the right chemistry at the table at the right time. And that's rare. It's really rare.
It does feel a lot like dating.
It is, and it's scary.
Yeah, it is.
Money's fault, which makes it worse, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Money with dating? Oh, that's a disaster.
Yeah, it's so true.
Not that attitude, but no, it can be really when it clicks. It can be just like dating. When it clicks, and it's really fun, and engaging, and compelling, and unique. So it's really hard running a business to do that. I mean, because any business guy will tell you, no, we just take everything. But a creative is different. A true creative person is, well, we want more.
Right.
Than just the money. So that's what makes it challenging.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, I'm sorry if I'm on a tangent over there. I'm known for that, by the
way. No, not at all.
I think we'll name the new firm Tangent.
that would be kind of cool. Like, there's
actually,
so many,
yeah.
It's like, what does he mean by that? Yeah. Yeah, that would be interesting. But yeah, just to shift back a little bit to going back to how does, you know, the young emerging designers out there, because I know you're working with a lot of them as a teacher, both with Type Ed and at LCAD right now. You know, what are some of the early mistakes that you see some designers are making when it comes to handling typography?
That's pretty easy. Not thinking.
Right.
The thinking designers is getting more and more rare out there. I told you that whole thing in class. Remember,
yes,
Zach?
Yes, a thinking designer is a paid designer.
Correct. And it's right?
Right.
If you're not thinking, you're going to miss a job, or you're not going to get it, or I missed this. So it should apply a little pressure. And pressure is healthy. A lot of pressure is not, right? We've seen that happening in the world now. Too much pressure. Things start to get worse. But a little pressure for education is good because it gets it a stick in your head. And you recorded it, right?
Yes.
So that's the main thing with design now. All of us old codgers that are, you know, 40 plus, all say the same thing. It's about nobody can concept that well anymore, the thinking path. And see, with type, for some reason, since we're all engaged in imagery, the type is, since it's the secondary now instead of the primary, the thinking, the time is crunched. They spent so much time on the imagery. They've got 5 minutes for the type. There's the problem. Is a lack of importance and respect for the content that it used to have, where you could have better type, better looking type on the page, whether it's a headline or lettering. And that initial approach and thinking is an issue. And for designers, you just need to be more cognitive. Always keep the concept or the idea in your head of the project. Keep the company in mind, keep the brand in mind, like your creative director would do.
Yeah.
He's gotta balance all that stuff, right? And keep it on track and make it unique. That's a big challenge.
Right.
How do you make something unique in 2016? It's a bitch.
It's very hard, yeah.
It's all been done before.
We've talked about it before, yeah, especially with portfolio sites, Dribbble, Behance, et cetera. Just everything is becoming more and more homogenous in society, but definitely with design and creativity for sure.
Yeah, it's a weird time.
It is, and I think it's going to be different pretty soon here, because I've seen this happen before. When we get to the state, as far as the country and the world and everything, where everything's strained, people start to take more risks, and that's when you start to see more creativity come out, like real creative, not somebody just trying to make another app for something else.
Right.
It needs to be better, but I mean, true change, you know, because a lot of the biggest brands in the world, we've studied branding, you know, have been conceived and executed and upstarted in a recession.
That's true.
That's a good point.
A lot of, because it's forcing us to be creative and change. And that's the thing too, is when you're talking about young designers, when they start, is it's hard to teach them when to apply that creativity. Like, when do you be creative and when do you produce? When do you execute and when to be conservative? That's really hard to teach. And I don't even know if I can do that just on the type level. You'd have to do that as a department level.
Yeah.
Is those are the things that have to be used in the industry. Is like, when do I really try to get unique? Because a lot of times with the corporate world, you can't. They say they want to be, but it's not really that creative or unique because they don't take that visual risk out there. I mean, they will soon, like I was saying, but when we're in these times of just watching everybody, we watch everybody. And so that's why everything looks homogenous.
Yep.
Yep.
So when it comes down to type and design for young designers, it's a matter of assessing and thinking, being cognitive of what needs to be done there. The typeface is usually the culprit. They put all their effort in the typeface and not the grid and the planning of the information on the page.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. It has to be flipped. I have also been told, and I think I told you this too, Zach. And don't tell this to font developers, they'll get pissed at me. It's not about the typeface, it's about how you use it that matters.
That's a good point.
It's how you use that typeface that matters to a designer, not what it looks like. I know that sounds strange, but it is. Because you can use Garamond for every project. You can, if you can handle it differently.
Mm-hmm.
And you can. You can handle hundreds of different ways. And I was taught that. That's how we were taught in type. You use one typeface and do a project. Most annual reports are like that. One, two typefaces. That's it.
I think, not to sound like super opinionated, but I think most projects should only be like one, two, or at the most three typefaces, right?
Yeah. I mean, because why that is, like you've learned, type's a system.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you complicate the system, you complicate the communication, and that's not what we're after in design.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
You're not after confusing the viewer. You're after enticing them and getting them to engage and be sold something or whatever, or interact. Right? Yeah. So you have to keep that in mind as a designer. That thinking part of being, you know, the cognitive part of approaching design is really important. Rachel's wanting to talk about the subject more and more. Is that approach is super important because you can get on a wrong path quickly if you're not thinking in the beginning. And that's my kind of message to young designers is be smarter. Don't be a designer in the beginning. Be smarter.
Yeah.
Study everything. A good graphic designer knows a lot about a bunch of different things. And that's the beauty of graphic design is learning all these different things.
Right.
Like
right.
We did this hotel for Kauakea, and it was the Poipu Beach Hotel that got destroyed in 94 hurricane. We had to rename it. And so when the client said, we want an authentic Hawaiian name, we said, okay, let's do it. And once we did our research, started coming up with names, we go, holy shit, the Hawaiian alphabet only has 13 characters, wow. Half of the Roman character system. We're really limited, gang.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. I didn't know that, see? And I couldn't sleep for two nights. How did they get there? We're in the middle of the ocean. How did they get that way?
That's pretty impressive.
Right? I know.
Yeah.
And that's kind of those discoveries and those things that you learn is really is what gives you goosebumps as a designer is, you know, learning all those new things. And now you have that experience. So
absolutely.
Anyway, that was another tangent, right?
No.
Yeah. Well, I think you bring up a good point, that I think a lot of I've made this mistake before, and I think a lot of younger designers do this, where they're, especially with the internet today, we're so fixated on other designers,
yeah,
and fixated on the graphic design rather than looking and learning from the rest of the world, you know. So I think it's a good point that you brought up.
Right. It's if everybody's looking at everything else. This is how I kind of also teach, and just to give you an insight into my mind, I'm German, so I ask why for everything.
Yeah.
So when I see design and the solution of it, I go, well, why did you choose that? Why is it red? Does it make sense? My first thing is, does it make sense as design? Our business consultant wants us to name the firm that.
That's cool.
That'd be cool. Some form of making sense, either cognitive or something. Because, I mean, really, a lot of this stuff is common sense, right?
I'm loving everything you're saying about the why behind everything, because I do think that a lot of young designers struggle with that, and it's just so tempting to people are replicating what they're seeing online and trying to be competitive in the visual aspect without, you know, thinking first about those little details that a lot of people overlook. So I'm loving your message about all that.
Well, thank you. I think, I think what's going on out there psychologically is everybody's having fun making and posting. Right, the act of making and posting it.
Yes.
Visually, right?
I've fallen into that too. Yeah, absolutely.
And you'll notice I don't post very often, especially work. And I'm getting really a lot of pressure from friends. How can you need to post your own work? Nobody's ever seen it, blah, blah, blah. So that's why I started that site and everything.
Right.
Because I have so much work that nobody's ever seen. And I said, well, I don't know if it's any good or whatever, you know. And because I'm always thinking business. You know, right. What does my background have to do with where my business is going? And nowadays it has a lot to do with it, I guess.
Yep.
Which I'm as kind of a shy guy, I don't like the being front stage thing.
I am being seriously 100% agree with you. I'm the same way.
Yeah.
So I'm hesitant to do that, and that's why I'm asking for friends for feedback on stuff. So, but I think the thing is just the act of doing things and being happy and being content with just making something. That is definitely not how I learned design. You make it good design, and then you post it. 90%, the reason why 90% of our work isn't seen is because it's not good enough for me. And I've been known for, Zach, you know, high standards.
Yes.
I mean, they'll show you put something on the wall, and you go, I worked all day on this. Yeah, but you're missing this right here.
Which is refreshing, to be honest.
Because,
like, when I was at school after I transferred, I was, like, convincing my teacher sometimes, like, no, you shouldn't give me an A on this. Like, it's like, B or C work. It's okay. And then my teacher was like, no, it's fine. Like, no. Like, seriously. It's okay. You could give me a bad grade.
Yeah, because you know now, like I told you, in design, it's not about the grade. It's about the quality of the work.
Right. Exactly.
The book is what gets you work, not the grade. The grade will get you up the lever in the academic path, but the book is what makes you on the street.
Absolutely.
You know, for work.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And now it's not even the book isn't that important. You know, I heard that Google's not even looking at resumes, won't accept them now. They just want an interview. They want to know how smart you are. Wow. They don't care where you've gone to school.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well,
you go to Google, you don't need a resume.
Yeah.
You just want to know that you're intelligent, can solve their problems.
Yeah. It's definitely, well, I think, I don't know, maybe you could comment on this a little bit. You're seeing a lot like the golden age of design, maybe in the sense where a lot of people referring it to that or that way, because their design thinking and problem solving is starting to get really valued at a high level, not necessarily maybe the production of like graphic design or web design, but the thinking and the process that comes behind it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's starting to get valued at a high level, right? You know, by the big corporate companies, I guess.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't. See, that's the struggle with business. If you're looking at it from a business standpoint, how long does it take and how much money does it cost me? That's what it comes down to. And if you can't create within that shallow, really narrowing window, a budget and time, you're not on it. And they'll do something else or get somebody else. And so that's the struggle right there is, can you work within that? And that window keeps crunching together. I'm putting my hands together like I'm clapping and narrowing the gap. And so that gap of time versus money keeps getting smaller, which is more pressure on the creative, right? So you have to be able to adapt in that, you know, in that framework.
Right.
But to your question about typographic fundamentals that are vital, I think for designers in general to know is just the mentality again, the state of mind of having type as a state of mind first. Like I've always taught, you know, I could figure out money, time, budget, everything by word count on an annual report. Wow. I still can do that. And so it comes down to the numbers again of how much type are we talking about here. My first boss was looking at resumes when I came through. And he was asking, how much type have you handled? Not what type have you handled, or what kind of lettering you did, or where you were, what experience you've had. How much content have you handled? Because he knows the more content you handle, the better you are.
Right.
At handling content. Content, whether it's lettering, whether it's UI, UX, that's still content. That's still all, by the way, graphic design.
Yep.
And whatever contents goes down the page. So if you can handle all that kind of type, which I think is the problem with the schools, they just have you doing more and more lettering and not enough typesetting. You got to be able to do both.
Yeah.
And so that's why LCAD, they want me to teach all three levels. They want me to take the whole system.
Yeah, that's super valuable.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a problem out there. Yeah. So we try to explain that to agencies. That's what we're trying to do because – and that's why we want to like make TypeEd some kind of certificate program, is that the industry needs it. And they're always bitching about type, and they always have since I was in college. So, the design shows, that's all they talk about. Better type. Students, what are they doing in college? Their type sucks, you know, all this kind of stuff. So I know the industry will love us for it if we can get that standard higher for handling a lot more content.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's been really great hearing all of your wisdom on this stuff. It's a real honor to have you
on our podcast.
Yeah, it's been great. Do you have any final thoughts for the audience here?
Just keep going. It's kind of grim out there, I guess. You know, as far as work, I know a lot of people are freelancing and everything. But and that's the thing, too, is that I'm finding out even I'm still learning. You know, that's what I tell my students when I get into class. We're all students in here. I'm not an instructor. Well, you're going to teach me stuff. I'm going to teach you stuff. We're all students. And we never stop being a student.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I would say to the crowd is never stop being a student. You always have to – I have friends in civil engineering and all, in law firms and everything. They have to keep taking tests. So they have to keep up on what's changing in the world. That's no different with the designer.
I agree.
Exactly.
You have to do your homework. Don't get complacent. That's a message for the crowd. Don't get complacent.
Yeah. No, definitely. I aim into that, Michael. Yeah. And no, I agree with Maria. It's really been a pleasure to talk to you. And, you know, I've known you for a while, and I always learn something every time I get to talk to you. And it's been a really, really nice experience.
Well, thank you for having me on.
It was
wonderful to talk to you guys.
Yeah, no, we definitely appreciate it. And just for our listeners, where can we find you on the web for Ramp, TypeEd, your personal site, anything you want to share with the listeners?
Let's see. You can go to typeed.com. That's TYPE-EED.com. And then Twitter is at TypeEd or at MW Stinson. And rampcreative.com is our agency. And my personal site is MW Stinson Portfolio. Oh, no, MWSportfolio.com. Sorry.
Awesome.
Great.
Yeah, we'll put this in the show notes so people can have access to them more easily.
Cool. Excellent. Well, thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us. And, you know, I'll be, you know, I'm definitely taking classes with TypeEd, obviously, and involved with the varsity team and all that. So I'll be talking more with you soon, obviously, Michael. And
Awesome.
Yeah, that's it, I guess.
Yeah, thanks.
Hopefully over a whiskey or something.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Whiskey.
Yeah.
Work looks great with whiskey.
Right?
Yes.
The two W's.
Yes, exactly. All right, Michael. All right. Well, thanks. We appreciate it. Bye-bye. Thank you so much, Michael, for that conversation today. It was really great to talk about the state of design and typography and what students could learn to be better, you know, typographic experts, or at least lay down that philosophy for them and that fundamental foundation. And I know not everyone that listens to us are designers, I should say. But I think even if you're not, there was a lot to take away from that, we hope. So, yeah, thanks for listening, guys. And, yeah, Maria, what else we got?
Well, if you have been enjoying listening to the Creative Honey podcast, feel free to go on iTunes and give us a 5-star review. Also, if you have any feedback or questions or suggestions, we'd love to hear from you. You can send us an email at hello@creativehoney.org. You can also tweet us. You can also find us on Facebook. You can listen to us on SoundCloud. You can find us on iTunes, and also you can hear episodes on our website as well. And also if you have Stitcher, you can listen to us there. So thank you so much for listening, guys.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Have a good one.